Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week, we are lucky enough to be joined by the amazing Nicole Perkins from the podcast This Is Good For You. Nicole Perkins is a writer and feminist and thinker who I have admired for a long time. She now has a podcast called This Is Good For You, where she celebrates women doing things that are good for them and pleasurable for them. And that is the whole thing. They don't have to be good and pleasurable and marketable, or good and pleasurable and sellable. They are like just good and pleasurable. She is also the author of the upcoming memoir, Sometimes I Trip on How Happy We Could Be, which I have pre-ordered, and you can pre-order wherever it is that you pre-order your books. Given that Hot and Bothered is a space where we are celebrating women's pleasure and romance, we thought that you would really enjoy this conversation with Nicole about her favorite romance trope and then a little bit from her podcast. I'm Vanessa Zoltan, and this is Hot and Bothered. So, Nicole, we're so excited to have you here today. I emailed you and was like, I would love to have you on to talk about one of your favorite tropes. And you sent me a list of like 10 of your favorite tropes.
Yes, I'm sorry. It was overkill, but also I was like, I can't think right now to like pick one. So please just dealer's choice.
Yeah, it was not overkill. It was amazing. Why should you have to pick? That was rude of me to ask you to pick a favorite. It would be like me emailing you and being like, pick your favorite child. Like, that's not nice. You're like, here are all of my children. You pick. And so one of the options that you gave was, and I'm going to quote the way you say it, stuck in a cabin with no power. Bonus, any kind of storm. Extra bonus, a murderer is after them.
Yes, I love romance thrillers so much. And I think the reason why I love this trope is because it is something that I would never want in real life, like ever.
First of all, can you explain to me the genre of romance thriller? I've never read a romance thriller. I have read hundreds of romance novels. And as soon as you get thriller involved, I'm like, that is the opposite of what a romance is. A romance is like safe and warm. Why do I need a murderer after me? Is it a romance thriller if like neither of the two main characters die and you like know that? What is a romance thriller?
So one of the main characters is running from their past, or there's some sort of law enforcement person, or they do forensic analysis, or, you know, that kind of thing, right? And then the other person is looking for someone who has committed some kind of crime, or they've been put in charge of the other person's safety somehow, or they used to work together, had a falling apart, and then have to join together again to fight this criminal. And it is usually a murderer, some sort of serial killer or some sort of abusive person like that. So there usually is an element of violence either off page, you know, mentioned off page, or, you know, sometimes there is a point of view from the killer or the criminal. So we get that in the middle of everything. And then the criminal figures out that these two people are after him somehow, because it's usually a man. And then he goes after the couple, and the danger heightens their attraction. It closes whatever gap that they had between them. You know, sometimes there's an enemies to lover thing. Again, sometimes there's a second chance element to the romance, or there's just kind of like instant attraction, but we have to stay focused or we're going to die, you know, that kind of thing. So there's all of that in the middle of it. And so some of my favorite thriller suspense authors are Sandra Brown. She has a strong, you know, a very strong branch of her work that is thrillers. Linda Howard, even Nora Roberts sometimes has like a little branch in her work there. I'm sure there are more recently that are, you know, more recent, but I'm a little out of the loop for more recent.
Alyssa Cole just had her first one, which was like a huge deal. And I am an Alyssa Cole completist. And I was like, why did you write Somewhere I Cannot Follow You? But now you're selling me on it. So maybe I will get to be an Alyssa Cole completist again.
I love them. There is this like mystery through it. Sometimes the author will tell you who the criminal is, so you know who they're looking for. Sometimes you don't know, and it ends up being someone that they're working with or someone that they least expect it, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it is so good. It is basically like, if you want romance and steam with your Murder, She Wrote, with your Columbo, you know, with your Murdoch mysteries, like whatever, then this is the genre. This is the genre for you.
Okay, but the couple ends up happy and healthy.
Yes.
Okay.
Now they do, sometimes they're, you know, somebody gets hurt.
Sure.
Which obviously adds to, you know, oh, I have to be your caretaker and now we're going to grow closer, or I can't believe I let you get hurt. This is all my fault. Oh, I'm so wounded now. I have to leave you, you know, and then it's why did you leave me? I needed you. And then they get back together and it's incredible. Some people have create series where the two of them get together and then they're fighting crime together, you know, that kind of thing. So it's beautiful. So yes, the main couple get together. They don't die. I can't say any, you know, the criminal may die.
Sure.
There may be some more victims within the book, but the main couple, they live happily ever after, or at least happy for now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I needed to know. Okay. The reason that I picked out of your 10 babies, the locked in the cabin baby is the one I'm making you talk about, is because it's one of my favorites. I love it in a movie, even in movies like 27 Dresses, right? Like that's how they get together. They get like locked in a car in a snowstorm. I love this trope so much. And I have never articulated to myself why. So I'm wondering if you can help me figure that out, or what is your theory as to why this trope is so lovable?
I think it's because it is so far out of what I want in reality. I do not like cold. Mm-hmm. I do not like snow. Mm-hmm. I do not like roughing it. I am not a camper. I don't know how to start a fire.
Mm-hmm. So far, you're describing me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can start a fire when I'm in somebody's house and there is kindling and everything like right there. But
I can do it if there's a switch, if there's one of those switches that turns on the fire.
Yes.
I'm like, show me which switch is the right switch. And then I bet I can do it.
Yes. Just show me where the gas comes in and we're good.
Yeah.
Also, because there's usually this caretaking element involved where maybe somebody got hurt. Maybe the criminal has shot one of them, or, you know, they got into a fight and somebody's bleeding and, you know, whatever. I don't want to do that. I do not want to be a nurse. If there was liquor, if there's like liquor in the liquor cabinet left over or something, then I would just be like, okay, I read this in a book. You can splash brandy on a wound. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just don't die. You know, like that.
This is really high alcohol beer. Do you think it'll work? Like, these would be the questions I would have.
And then sometimes in this trope, the two people are strangers and they have stumbled upon each other as they are both trying to get away from the danger, right? I definitely don't want to be stuck in a cabin with a strange man. Like, no way in hell. You know, just all of these things just add up to like, no, I don't think that that's really for me in real life. would I go, you know, on a quote unquote vacation to a nice little cabin in the woods that's like got an Instagram account? So I know that there's like some sort of connection to life. Yes, that sounds cute. That sounds great. I could do that. I do not want to like be fighting against elements and blood loss and trying to listen for, you know, the serial killer outside the door. I don't want any of that, but it's really good on paper.
I feel like there are a few moments, like a few beats in the trope that I love. One is that one of the people always realizes before the other person that they're stuck there. There's always one person who's like, there must be a phone, there must be cell service, there must be, we can make it to the village. And then there's another person who's like, nope, and is like nesting already. Yes. And there's something like super sexy about the competent person who accepts the fate. Yes. And is like, no, let's start doing inventory. There are two blankets. And I don't care if it's the man or the woman. It is super hot to like have one person just be like, I've accepted reality. And now we're setting up shop.
Whew. Yes.
Love yes. competence.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's definitely a part of it. And also, if it's the man and if it's, you know, a heterosexual pairing and the man is the one that's kind of like, let's get together and see what's going on, what we have here. The woman is also very competent. She's just like, totally. She's not like, oh no, I don't know anything at all. Like, I don't even know what is fire. You know, like she's right. not like that.
She's not like, where's the switch for the fire? Like I would be a not great character in this.
Yes, yes. And I guess that is also another element that appeals to me about this trope is that because I know that I would be, I don't want to say I would be completely helpless. I'm not a damsel, yeah. you know, but I think maybe I would need a little bit more time to process what's going on before totally. I could then jump into trying to make sure what do we have and what do we need?
So, right. There's also the heroin wish fulfillment of like, yeah, I would totally be this chill and great about it.
Yes.
And it is. It's so much of why I love these cabin moments is because like there are so many moments that have to be MacGyver-y. I mean, even just the like math of like there are two of us and there's only one bed. And I'm like, there's going to be the attempt to sleep on the floor, this attempt to waffle and go head to foot. And then inevitably, they're going to both have to be in the bed. And like, I love watching that negotiation. I'm thinking now of the movie Leap Year with Matthew Good.
Yes. Yes. Which is a terrible movie. And it is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Me too.
It is so bad.
Oh my God. No, it's the best. And they even have to do like a little bit of a fake relationship in order to get access to the one room that they have to share.
Yes.
And yeah, and it's like a perfect example of everything we've talked about where like he's super competent in one realm and she's super competent in another realm. And so mm-hmm. it's only together that they're going to be able to get through this like series of mishaps.
Yes.
Whatever. That movie is so well cast with Matthew Good, Amy Adams, and that wool sweater. Like that wool sweater that he wears is my favorite actor in that film.
Oh my gosh. I watch it. I think I may have bought it. I bought a digital copy because it is, well, you know, I don't believe in guilty pleasures, but it was still just kind of like, do I admit that I like this movie? Because I know it was panned, you know, and whatever, but it's so cute. I just love it. I love it. But yes. So the one bed trope, you know, it's like, we have to conserve warmth or, you know, we'll be right. better. Body heat is better than just sitting here across the room, you know, freezing to death. Yes, give me the body heat, you know. And then, of course, there's always somebody who like falls in the snow or falls into like the frozen lake and the clothes get really wet and they're like, it'll be better if you have to take your clothes off. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Will I?
I've read it. Six titles came to mind as you said that. And I was like, I love it every single time. So, Nicole, I obviously do not know you well, but I have listened to you on podcasts for years. And because of that, I feel strongly that I can say that you are super pro consent.
Yes.
And so what's so interesting about these dynamics, it's like your body needs something more than your willingness does. It feels like a safe way to give women permission to say, yes, I will let you hold my naked body, without it being about this active consent. Like, sometimes I think there's an idea, like, consent is sexy, but saying, like, yes, please, these are all the things I want you to do to me, is sometimes not what you want to do in a sexual dynamic, right? You don't want to necessarily spend the time listing of, like, do this, don't do this, right? Like, there's something fun about something, like, sweeping you away. And I think that part of what's hot about this trope is that it's not you who's saying yes, it's the wet clothes that's making you say yes, and you just happen to be into it.
For me, what I'm kind of hearing and what I pick up on with this trope is release and just the freedom of letting go and not yes. being in control. So
yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah. So these are people who are in control of their lives and whatever they're doing. And then now they are part of something that's beyond their control, right? The elements, the power, like whatever, getting out safely. And so when they realize there's an attraction, or if the attraction has been building, it's just a release to finally just be like, okay, here's something I can control. You know, the relationship between the two people. And so when you end up in that one bed and you feel the other, you know, the guy's body responding just because he's a man, right? Then it's just kind of like, do you respond? Do you roll over? Because there's still always that part of, you know, that mm-hmm. gets put in these books, you know, does the woman roll over and say yes? Does she look at him a certain way to say yes? And then he reads her. And it's also a way of, like you said, not having to say it when you're with somebody who knows you, even if you're, mm-hmm. you know, you haven't been together very long, or the circumstances of you getting to this, you know, abandoned cabin, but it's still just like, here's an instant attraction with somebody who can read me and read my signs. Because sometimes you don't want to say, yes, please, I would like to have sex now, you know? And then if it is a tense situation, it's a good release. It's a good stress reliever. It's a good way of being like, okay, my shoulders are in my ears. Maybe you could put my ankles on your shoulders and everything will be great. I don't know. You know, so I think
it'll just lower your shoulders, which exactly, is just like massage exactly. therapy. Good for you.
So I do think, yes, there is an element of, I don't always want to have to say yes explicitly, but I still am enthusiastic and I want this. And so when you are in a bed and you just kind of roll over and you look at each other's eyes as the fire is dwindling, and then you know. And then it's also kind of beautiful to be with someone who can read you so well in these circumstances.
Totally. The other thing I love about this trope is like the awkward, like, day after, where you get out of the storm in the cabin and you're looking at each other and you're like, well, we had this super intense interaction because we got locked in this cabin together. And the like, and now whatness of it is also right. super hot. It's like you have right. to have this conversation of like, it turns out that actually meant something to me. Oh, but it probably doesn't mean anything to him or to her. And the anxiety around the like opening the door and the sun shining and the real world being on the other side, I feel like is such a relatable moment of, I care about this person. I don't know how much they care about me, but yes. in this like supersonic way that makes it more intense and exciting.
Yes, absolutely. I like that moment of uncertainty too, because I think that is also when the feelings are magnified and they actually become clearer. And that's what makes the characters uncertain, because, you know, they know how they feel about the other person. But it's just what happens next. Like you said, what's the and now what element of it? So I love that. I love that so much.
So, Nicole, before we say goodbye to you, the rest of this episode is going to be people listening to an episode of your podcast, This Is Good For You. I was wondering if you could tell us just a little bit about your podcast and why you decided to make it and what the content and goal of the podcast is.
Sure. So the podcast is called This Is Good For You. And when the pandemic started, or when lockdown started, I realized that I had no hobbies, nothing that I was doing just for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to cross stitching, which is something that my mother had taught me when I was a little girl, because I knew that it was not something that I would monetize. You know, yep. Like, I watch a lot of TV, I listen to music all the time, you know, I'm reading books all the time, but I am also a freelance writer who writes about pop culture a lot. So I'm reading these things, I'm watching these things, I'm listening, and I'm like, oh, this is really good, I should write about this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was not able to turn that off. So I wanted to start a podcast that was about the things that we do to find pleasure in our life, that's strictly about pleasure. You know, we talk about how it's okay not to be okay, which is fine. I absolutely believe that. But then sometimes when we have those moments where we're feeling good, we immediately go, okay, well, what's bad going to happen next? This feeling isn't going to last. And so I'm like, it's okay for us to feel good and to just sit in that pleasure for a little bit. And it could be anything. So I've done episodes. Our first episode was about this sexpert and pleasure coach who was teaching people how to ride eggplant emoji, shall we say. And then the next episode was about needlecraft. And then I've got another episode about sports where one woman is learning how to skateboard at the age of 35 and another woman learned how to speak skate at the age of 39. So I want people to, one, find pleasure, accept pleasure, and be okay with it. And also recognize that pleasure doesn't happen when you're 20 and stop when you're 30. You know, that you can find things, you can do, pick up new habits at any age. So the episode that your listeners are going to listen to features a very special guest, Bim Adewunmi, who was my co-host of Thirst Aid Kit. And Bim, in this episode, is talking about the joy of baking bread. So that is this episode.
I'm so excited. And of course, baking bread, a great thing to do in a cabin as soon as the competent one of you finds some flour, yeast, and salt. It's like, don't worry, I've got it. Oh my God, there's lavender outside. We can make lavender-infused bread.
Yes, yes. And if there's like snow, we can melt the snow to get some extra water. And there you go.
There you go. Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. And now, everybody, you are going to hear This Is Good For You, Nicole's podcast. And halfway through, you're going to realize that you love it so much. So make sure that you subscribe.
Thank you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everybody,
How's it going? We are hurtling past spring and summer is dangerously close. Way too close. I don't know how to fully feel about any of it. I don't think I'm ready for summer. You know, it's been about 15 months since America finally admitted there was a major health crisis and the government decided to send everybody into lockdown. And, you know, a lot of people were forced to stay home. And while they were at home, they decided to try to make the best of the situation. You're trying to stay as positive as possible. But soon my social media was flooded with art projects and clothes people were making and room renovations and bread. Lots and lots of bread. So much so that yeast became a hot commodity. It was sold out everywhere in the stores, on the grocery apps, in the instant delivery apps. No one could find yeast anywhere. Not a day went by that I didn't see someone's sourdough starter experiment come across my Instagram stories. Even Jake Gyllenhaal and Stephen Colbert talked about their bread frustrations during a socially distant Zoom interview where Jake was looking delicious, okay? And the thing is, baking bread is a great skill to have, even when you're not performing productivity during a pandemic. Homemade bread is delicious. I love it. I want all of it. And yet I know my baking limits. Making bread from scratch is not my ministry. But I have a really good friend, someone I think many of you may know, who is now Queen of the Loaf. Today, I'm talking with the fantastic, the beautiful, the talented and amazing Bim Adewunmi, my former co-host of the awesome show Thirst Aid Kit, all about her experience of learning how to bake bread. Now, this won't be your typical conversation about kneading dough. Bim helps me realize that learning this kind of skill is life-affirming in more ways than one. What happens when you decide to follow a trend and find lasting joy? And will this skill help in a zombie apocalypse? You have been baking bread.
I have been baking bread.
How and why?
Wow. The judgment in the air. How? More importantly, why?
No, because it seems like for a stretch in this last year or so of everything, as I wave my hands vaguely, people have just been like, you know what? I'm going to use up every ounce of yeast in the tri-state area and make some bread.
Yeah.
And I could not join that bandwagon. So tell me about baking bread.
Okay. So baking bread for me comes down to a very important thing, which is I love to eat bread. Every time I talk to people and they're kind of like, oh, I've cut out carbs or, you know, like I really reduce my bread. I'm like, huh. That seems like a neat trick that I will never master and also don't want to master. Bread is delicious. When I think about bread, I think about how old it is. Mm-hmm. Bread is like the most human food. Like it's in almost every ancient text. There is an example of somebody baking bread, like grinding some kind of grain, milling some kind of whatever the fuck. Someone's like fire, water, yeast, heat. Like when I think about the fact that yeast just is in the air, I'm just like, yeah,
right.
That to me feels like a divine sort of encouragement. Make some bread. You don't even need shit. You need flour. You need water. You need air. And the yeast will find its way. And then bread comes together. And that to me is in a very romantic, poetic kind of way. I'm like, man, bread survives. Bread, it prevails, it lives on. And long after we've, you know, made ourselves extinct and probably taken most of the planet with us, I imagine whatever comes next will be baking bread or some form of bread. So in that kind of mystical sort of wishy-washy hippy-dippy kind of like, oh my God, I love bread. It's so ancient. There's that. And then there's the other fact, which is that I love to eat bread. I will eat bread in any situation. I will eat bread on a bus. I will eat it on the cuss, whatever the fuck that rhyme is. I will eat bread at any point during the day. I don't believe in that thing of like, oh, I don't eat after six. I'm like, wow, that's so sad for you. Eat some bread and see how you feel. I love it with butter. I love it with jam. I love it with marmalade. I love it in like Nigerian stews. I love it toasted. I like it plain. I like it if there's seeds or nuts or if it's like whatever. You can put most things on bread and I'll be like, oh yeah, I'll try it. Because it's bread. The base is solid. There's nothing outside of it. So two things. I am absolutely enchanted by the idea of bread being ancient and that it exists still and pretty much unchanged. Like we add all sorts of stuff to it, but bread is bread is bread, right? And then the other thing is that I think bread is maybe the most delicious carb. And I, like I said before, I love carbs. I love bread. I love rice. I love potatoes. But bread is, it is maybe, I think it's the thing I eat the most of any food. So it made sense to bake my own bread.
I love bread as well. Bread and potatoes. You can have the rice, but bread, bread. And
I love how much you don't fuck with rice. It's my favorite thing.
I cannot stand rice, but bread, it is so good. And a couple of years ago, I did this tweet where I was like, tell me about the fried bread of your culture.
Right.
And everybody, like, it was almost the same thing over and over, the way fried bread just kept coming up in like these lovely little pockets of meats or vegetables. And I was just like, oh, I love it so much. I think I was thinking about it because I just had a samosa. I think about this shit all the time. You're talking about ancient stuff. I think about who was the person that looked out at this field of wheat and was like, huh, if I take a couple of these strands and then just like grind it up, add some water, and then put it over the fire, this is going to be amazing. This will be the start of civilization.
I think about that all the time. The things that you can't see an obvious line. Like literally that person kind of like, oh, the birds seem to like it. Maybe we will too. Like there's that. But it's like, I mean, like even the more complex stuff where I'm kind of like, who decided to wrap melon in ham? And was like, those two taste sensations. It's like a weird, like I always think about that. Like I understand the science of it. And it's kind of like, well, hot goes with this and sour goes with it. I get all of that. But somebody still had to think about it, try it. And then it became so popular because of one person committing to a thought. And now thousands of years later, we're like, have you tried this bread? It's from Lebanon. This is how they do it over there. And you're like, wow. So many things get tried and discarded so quick. Like, oh, we're never doing that shit again. But, and that was what happened for me in 2020, was like the pandemic started. Everybody and their mother was like, I'm going to start my sourdough starter. And I was at home because I'm a media wanker. And I was like, I too will start my sourdough starter. And it will be different than anybody else's because I am so good at this, you know? And I was not good at it. I just couldn't. My starter just wouldn't get going. It wouldn't start, ironically. And I remember I checked like forums every single day, like almost every hour I was awake. I'd be like, hey, does it look normal if this happens? Or, oh God, it's doubled overnight. Is that good? Oh, it's good. Okay. But then it stopped doubling. Oh, wait, what do I put the discard? Do I throw it away? Wait, what do you mean by discard? Like, what is the levain? Who is, and I was doing all of this, like I was studying like for the bread Olympics.
Yes.
And I was obsessed. And then very quickly, I was like, this is unsustainable. What you're doing right now, you cannot be this stressed out about fucking bread every day when in the shops, there is bread that you've been eating all your life and it's fine. Mm-hmm. And so you need to stop. So in a way, I stopped caring so much about the sourdough part of it. And I was like, wait, I love sourdough, by the way. Love it. Mm-hmm. But there are other breads. You don't have to succeed at this specialist Brooklyn media wanker bread. Like you can just do other bread. So then I began doing other bread and it has been a sort of blissful relationship with baking bread ever since.
Okay. So what type of bread are you baking now?
Right now, my easiest loaf to do is a no knead, super basic, like the most basic crusty loaf that I prepare the dough, I cover it overnight, I get up in the morning and I bake it. Like sometimes I get up super early, bake it in the morning. And at those moments, I think to myself, should I retire to a fishing village in Scotland and open up my own bakery? I couldn't help but wonder. And then 5 seconds later, I'm like, no, you should not go to Scotland and retire to a small community and bake your bread. First of all, who the fuck do you think you are? But in those moments, I think to myself, oh, I'd name the shop Bim the Bakers. And I would make all sorts of cute, delicious baked goods. And literally, it lasts 5 minutes, maybe every couple of weeks. And I'm usually holding a mug of tea like a divorcee in like a HBO prestige drama when I have this thought. I'm just like, you know, take a sip, like, should I Bim the Baker? Yeah. And then once I'm done with a cup of tea and I have to shower for work, I'm like, I'm a radio producer. What the fuck? No. Then I go to my job.
Okay, well, see, this intrigues me because part of why I cannot get it to bread is all of the kneading. I'm looking at these recipes and I've tried it and they're like, oh, you got to knead this bitch for 20 minutes. No, I'm not standing wrestling with this piece of dough, this like blob of dough for 20 minutes. And even I have a stand mixer that has the little hook for bread kneading, but I'm too fucking lazy even to bring that out and like set it up because obviously I'm in New York and counter space is nil. So I'm like, I don't feel like wrestling with that thing and like setting it up or whatever. I need something that's going to be easy. And then I feel like I don't have enough space to like, oh, I'm going to powder down the counter and I'm sitting there rolling stuff out. And, you know, I have the utensils for it, but I'm like, this shit is too much effort.
Uh-huh. It's not. There's no other way of saying that. It's just not. It's not. Here's the thing. In every single day of your life, you are faced with all sorts of options to do stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do it, you do it.
This is true. Right. If he wants to return the text, he will return the text. And if he doesn't want to return the text, then he won't return
the
text.
He won't. And that's bread is that dude that you met on Tinder. Do you want to bake bread, sis? Then you bake it. It comes down to that, because that was very much my feeling of just kind of like, oh my God, who is this person who gets up and bakes bread? And it turns out it's me. I'm bitches. It's me. Bitches be getting up at 6 a.m. to bake bread. I'm bitches. I'm doing that shit. And it's because it gives me a sort of pleasure that is completely unrelated to any other kind of pleasure in my life. Like, this is not reliant on anybody except me. And when I'm done, I eat my pleasure, which sounds horrific.
No, it doesn't. But that's the thing, though, because this is something that's strictly for you, because everything else is kind of like, I mean, obviously that you're watching television or movies or whatever that are for pleasure. But sometimes there's still that part of your brain that's like, should I write about this? Who wrote about this? Whatever.
Right. What are the opinions about this? How should I think about this? What am I feeling about this? And can I parlay this into a thing that I do in my other job? And oh my God, I'm writing this TV pilot. Wait, that's incredibly similar to my idea. Oh shit. And I have to start again. Like, you can't turn it all the way off. I think if you are somebody who makes pop culture as well as consumes it, there's no way for you to turn that off. There simply isn't. I don't care what anyone says. Like, anyone can say that whole thing of like, no, you can just enjoy it. Just turn your brain off. Lies. You can't. Your brain is on. It doesn't go off unless you're, you know, in a state of unconsciousness. And even then, sometimes you're still processing that shit even when you are asleep.
Yes.
It is a weird sort of proclamation that people make. Like, no, you can just, no, you can't. It's impossible. Bread. Not only do I get up and bake this thing, I eat all of it. And then I do it again. There's something about the wholesale. It's a perfect circle. I wake up, I mix the stuff, I cover it, it rises, it does its thing. I let it rest. I heat up the oven. I get the Dutch oven out. I put it in the thing. I get it out. I let the bread rest. I can hear it crackling while it's cooling. And then I slice it up. Sometimes I put it in a bread bin. Sometimes I put it straight into the freezer, sliced, of course, so I can, you know, get my toast however I want to. And then once that loaf is done, I make another. And the cycle starts again. And that's the other thing as well. I haven't really expanded to other things. I'm not out here trying to make bagels. I'm here for bread. I'm bread alone. I'm very much a one bread lady. I know what I love. I know what I have time for. And I know what I want to get good at. And it's bread. I want to be able to kind of look at four ingredients, right? Water, flour, salt, and yeast. And know that I can make something that is delicious and edible and it's something that I've made with my own hands, even though I'm relying on things like fast-acting yeast and whatever. But in reality, the four ingredients, me and just space, is all I need. And in terms of what you were saying about counter space, my old apartment, I don't know if you remember, has literally just the one little counter bit, and it's crowded. There's my toaster, there's my kettle, there's like chopping boards on it. And when it was time to like dust down and kind of roll out stuff or whatever, I just moved them, wiped it down.
And I did that.
And then when it was done, I put my kettle back. That was me delivering you some subtle shade, Nicole. I moved them and then I moved them back. And by the end of it, I had a delicious loaf. So no, I'm not going to let you get away with like, there's no space.
Fine. But like,
he thought you were slick. She was like, oh, what do I do? What's a lady to do in New York? She moves the kettle, bro. She moves the kettle. That's all she does.
Oh, man. No, but it is. I don't want to have to play fucking Tetris in my kitchen in order to.
I get that.
Cook. So I do feel like if I were to get to a point where I had a kitchen and there was plenty of space, I had a little island or something like that in my kitchen, I do think that I would be more willing to experiment and make my own pizza and make bread. I don't know if I could do sourdough because, again, I don't have the patience. Like,
I hear you.
You know, our good friend Sandy,
yes,
they make excellent sourdough bread.
Incredible.
Like, it's so good. And I have house-sitted for them a couple of times and I've had to deal with, like, the discard and all that kind of stuff, and then putting a little bit back on. And when I'm doing that, I'm thinking, who was the person that realized this is what you had to do to make sourdough?
It's remarkable. Like, what is the thought process? And I will tell you this as well. Like, I made one sourdough loaf, and it was the saddest looking loaf you've ever seen in your life. I ate it. It felt like, as I was eating it, I was like, it's like eating a brick. Like, it went down my stomach, and then it just sat there. And I was like, this is going to present some digestive tract problems later on, but we'll let future Bim deal with that. I just ate a lot of kale that day. I was like, fuck this. TMI, I apologize. But the thing about the discard is it's a world of recipes, like a world of recipes. And I did so much stuff with the sourdough discard that was not baking per se, but it was using the stuff for the baking. I made crumpets. I made like little chips. I made like pancakes. I made like little pikelets. And so in a way, I was like, you know, it almost doesn't matter that I'm not making the sourdough bread, because the stuff from the discard, I got incredible. And I'm not even exaggerating. There is photographic evidence. People have tasted these crumpets.
I remember your crumpets. I remember seeing the pictures of your crumpets.
They look like shop bought. I was like, wait, am I a crumpet savant? Is this my calling? Bim the Bakers might live yet. Like, what the hell? I remember toasting it. I sent a photo to my sister. And she's like, oh, where do you buy crumpets in New York? And I was like, I made them. And she was like, what? These look like they're from the shop. And I was like, you know, what she said in particular was, she said, these look like the ones you get at M&S, which is Marks and Spencer. And I could have wept. I wanted to reach through the phone and just like kiss her. I was like, how did you know that was the best compliment you could give these crumpets? So like, that's the thing I do enjoy about this. It's like, I started off, like I said, wanting to master sourdough bread. That didn't work out. I learned how to use the discard to make stuff. And then I also learned that there were all these other things where I don't need to knead for 20 minutes. I don't need to sit and watch the bread like it's my child. And I don't even need the equipment of like a stand mixer. So when I read recipes and they're like, just use the hook accessory to blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, never had one. I'm too broke for that shit. I don't own a KitchenAid just gleaming on my kitchen counter. So everything I do is on my tiny little counter, well, my old apartment, my tiny little counter space and just my hands and a dish towel and parchment paper and a very, very basic. I use like a Lodge cast iron pot. So not licorice, nothing fancy. And it just gets it done every single time. And the pleasure, the absolute pleasure of baking bread, genuinely. And I never thought I would be this basic, but each loaf is better than the last. And it's the same ingredients. It's the same amount of water. It's the same salt. It's the same yeast. It's the same flour. I use different brands. That's the other thing. I'm not precious about the flour. People will say, you can only use King Arthur. Oh, mm-hmm. Oh my God, are you using Gold Medal? That's like the blah, blah, blah of flour. And I'm like, interesting. The bread is delicious regardless. So what is it you're talking about, bro? Like, I'm sure the real connoisseurs are kind of like, well, you can taste the aeration and blah, 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 and the protein content. And like, this has a higher, sure. I'm sure some of them have a higher glycemic index or whatever the fuck. All I know is when I slice the bread, and you can hear it, I bought like a really nice Mercer bread knife. I bought it specifically so I could slice my little homemade loaves. Literally. And when the knife goes through it, and you can hear it kind of do that crunch all the way through. And they're like, your countertop is littered with like crumbs, which I don't even discard. I lick my finger and I pick them up because I'm a dirty, dirty dog. And then I eat all of them bit by bit and it's delicious. And then I wrap it in my little plastic. I put it into like the little freezer Ziploc bag. I zip it up. I put it in the freezer. And then the next morning, you know, you make your coffee or your tea.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go to the freezer. You pull it out. Two slices minimum. You get an avocado that you brought out the night before so it's not too cold. You slice that up. Put a bit of onion salt, some lime juice, some sesame seeds, some chili flakes because I like a bit of punch. Mash them together enough that the avocado still has like, you know, texture to it. So it's not like a creamy mush.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that onto the bread. Before you do that, though, you put a bit of just enough, not too much, bit of butter. You can also use vegan butter. Delicious. Earth balance, top notch. You get into all the little nooks and crannies, right? Because the bread, that's the good thing about all the bread. It has all these little pockets.
Yeah.
And they just collect butter. So you put some butter, not too much. And then you spoon your avocado mix on top. If you like, if you're fancy, sprinkle some feta on top.
Mm.
If you don't like, a little bit of lime juice on top.
Mm-hmm.
Put that shit in your mouth. And I'm telling you, top three things you will put in your mouth at any given time in the day, in the month, in the year. And the best part of that is that bread, you made it. I can't describe the feeling of accomplishment. I'm like, bitch, do you know what Abraham did this shit? Are you kidding me? Like, what? And now I put like an avocado from Mexico on top, bitch. Don't even talk. I literally walk around like I am a gangster. I'm like, do you understand what I just did? I took four discrete ingredients and now I'm eating a crunchy slice of bread. Bitch, when will you join me on my level? It's amazing. So for the sense of well-being, untouchable, bread baking.
Yeah, I love that. You have made avocado toast one of the most sensual experiences of my life.
I will make you some.
Please do. I am waiting for my loaf, please. I would like a loaf of Bim's bread.
Literally, I will make you a loaf. Because you asked about this. And I was like, is she serious? Because I will. You don't have to encourage me to make you a loaf of bread. I will do so. Do you have a bread bin? You can slice it and put it in the freezer. It doesn't matter.
I don't, but I have a cake thing. So maybe I'll just stick it in my...
That'll do. That'll do, friend. Just from brown paper, put it in there. I promise you, the pleasure of it is... That's another key part of it. Like, I went into this because, like I said, I want to eat bread. But there's something about... It's a bone-deep pleasure. Like, my soul, I can feel it glowing a bit brighter when I make the bread.
I love the metaphor of this whole experience of you went in to do one task, found that it was not satisfactory, but you took the skills that you learned and went into a different direction that was still like what you set out to do, but in a different way, you know?
Yes.
And you were still able to use the mistakes from that first little journey and still create something from that. So there's like this whole beautiful allegory in bread making.
Thank you. I'm glad you say that because, you know, I listened to a previous episode where you said this thing that I found to be so true for me, which is if I'm not good at something immediately, I'm like, oh, fuck that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Immediately, I'm kind of like, this is hard. Ugh, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'm a child in that regard. I feel like a baby. I'm just mm-hmm. like, ugh, this is hard. I was told it'd be easy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to do this. So when the sourdough kept frustrating me, and this was over a period of like several weeks, it wasn't like a one and done. I tried at least three different starters, at least three. And that takes time to build up.
Right.
So we're talking about maybe a couple of months, maybe even longer, of disappointment and feeling so sad about it in like a way that was surprising. I'm like, dude, it's just bread. And like literally, again, you can buy this. Like the first time I couldn't do it, I went straight to Trader Joe's and I bought like a really nice sourdough loaf and I came back and I ate like four slices of it, just angrily glaring at the mess on my counter. Like, look what you could be, you bitch. Look what you could be. and it wouldn't do. So like, I felt really kind of frustrated in a way that burned me. And I was surprised by it because I was like, fam, it's just bread. What are you doing? But I got so het up.
Maybe that's why the sour starter didn't want to do his thing, because it saw how angry you were eating its final form. It was like, fuck this,
maybe,
I'm not going to be.
Maybe the second and the third starter had that. The first one has no excuse. Like, I came to that with an open heart. I was like, hey, let's be friends. And the starter said, if we're friends, I kill you. And it was just kind of like, you have so little to do. All you have to do is get the yeast in the air. Like, you're on top of the fridge. Your life is aimless. You're just here to form the thing that you normally form. And somehow that's a problem when I'm involved. Like, who sent you? Why are you trying to demean my sense of self? I really felt attacked by this sourdough starter. Like, I felt so angry. It felt to me like every imbecile in Brooklyn was making sourdough. And I was like, I could be an imbecile. Help me out. Like, why can't I join the ranks of the sourdough fuckers? Like, I want to be in this club. And the club would not admit me. So I was like, fine. I don't even want to be part of your mangy club. So I went and I made my basic ass bread. And yeah, the pleasure of it, the accomplishment of it, this bread to me feels like something that belongs to a very specific part of me, which is the part that wants to make something and see the result of it. Like many people, I was talking about this with my sister recently, if you came up and you didn't have a lot of money, you tend to think about how you spend your money and what that looks like. So I often think about spending money on a trip is always very difficult for me, on an experience, because I'm kind of like, you can't even touch it when it's done. Like, you spend however much money on this thing, and what, it's an idea? The fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every time I have to buy a flight home, I'm like, I guess. And it's like, well, how else are you going to get? You're going to swim the ocean? I'm like, oh, I'm not going to swim it. But like, I want to touch the thing more. Like, for this, I want to be in the cockpit for this amount of money. Like, what the fuck? I'm just sitting in some chair, like cramped up, my knees in my chest. Like, it doesn't feel good. But this, it takes so little. Flour is relatively so cheap. Salt is in every home. Yeast is superbly cheap. The water is right there. Out of that, you have 4 days worth of breakfast.
Right. And a couple of years ago, you investigated some survivalists. And you were like out in the wild preparing how to like shoot turkeys and all of that. So with that knowledge and now this knowledge of baking bread, do you feel like you could survive the zombie apocalypse?
Absolutely not. I would die in the pre-credit sequence so damn quick. I would be like a face in the crowd. You wouldn't even catch my name. It was that bit. Oh, it's too late. She's gone. Like, I'd be gone. I have no skills. Let's be very fucking clear on this. I'm a journalist. Come on. What am I going to do? Write you a paragraph about the apocalypse? Come on. Do you know what I mean? However,
yes.
If I had been perhaps in a coma at the time of the apocalypse and then I had somehow awoken and they were like, damn, this community is thriving. We have flour, we have salt, we have yeast, we have water. Ah, if only someone could make some bread. I'd be like, excuse me, bitches. That's me. And then I would make the bread. And people were like, oh my God, how do you do this? I'm like, well, I read this blog post. And you know, this is very much just the thing of I bake it, I eat it, I feel pleasure, I feel full. And it's full in terms of like my stomach is full, but my soul is full, which is a very cheesy way of saying that there is no extra motive for this. I'm not doing this with an eye to entering a competition. If I end up making a radio piece about this, it won't be because,
right,
oh, I tried to make bread for 6 weeks and blah, blah, blah. It'll be because it's a natural exuberance for the thing that I'm doing. And that's how I think about it. I am exuberant about bread. My feelings for it are so big and lifelong. Like, this is one of the things that has been a constant in my life since I could munch food. And the chance to make it is, yeah, I feel very happy whenever I'm baking or eating bread. These are my two happiest states.
Bim, it is time for our indulgences, the things that we can enjoy without guilt, for the pure pleasure of it. What do you have for us today?
I went over this 5 million times in my brain and I couldn't think of anything that would have a traditional association of guilt, mostly because I'm very boring. And also because, you know, as we said a lot on Thursday Kit, I don't believe in guilty pleasures.
Right, yeah.
When I couldn't land on anything that gave me a feeling of guilt, and then I thought, okay, what's my secret shame? And it's a shame in something that is so boring. It is the pastime of a 55-year-old man who has never been able to make friends. But that's the thing I love to do. And I've just rediscovered it in a big way. And that is jigsaws.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So it's not quite guilt, but I want to urge people to do a 1,000-piece jigsaw if they can. 3,000 pieces. The smaller and more ridiculous, if it's gradient, something difficult and challenging and something that you cannot do while doing something else, right? Like,
right.
If you are putting together a jigsaw, you are not also able to be typing an essay. You need your brain in its most minute little ways to be looking very, very hard at one image and trying to remake that image from an assortment of many, many other pieces. And for me, jigsaws are a sort of real life, turn your brain off, feel no shame about the fact that you are basically sitting here looking at an image and then trying to remake that image. Like, it's the most pointless thing in the world. It's like, so what's the point of this? Oh, nothing. Once you're done, what do? You break it up and you try again. It's like, huh? It doesn't make any sense. But I promise you, there's one in particular that I really enjoy doing. And it's a Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. Even saying it, I know how I sound. It's a Kellogg's Frosted Flakes jigsaw. And it's all the vintage fonts and Tony the Tigers over the years. And putting it together was one of the most frustrating. It took me like a week and a half. And by the end of it, I wanted to high five myself, which again, talking about nerdy, terrible reactions, that was one of them. But I took a photo of it and I posted it like it was like a thing that I should be proud of.
You should be.
A few people replied. They're like, well done. And I was like, thank you. As if I just completed like writing the Iliad. It was just ridiculous. But I was like, thank you. Yeah. No, people often talk about the Sistine Chapel. I just want people to really think about this jigsaw that I just completed. I think they're on the same level. Yeah. You can call me Michelangelo. I did that shit. I did it. I felt so proud of myself. And then afterwards, you know, you're lying in bed, eyes wide in the dark, like, the fuck? But I felt such joy at the completion of that, that I thought to myself, you are not allowed to feel bad about this very, very, very nerdy thing that you enjoy doing, because you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to just have a thing that isn't for anybody except you. Mm-hmm. And if you feel a little bit weird about it, realize that what you've done is internalize people's feelings about this thing, but it's not the thing that you feel, and that's okay. And if you ask me if there was a second thing that I could do without shame or guilt, it would be sleeping. I can't recommend it highly enough. I just want to put that on the table.
Yes.
As a secondary option. Everybody should be napping more. It would help a lot. So many bad opinions on Twitter. Imagine if you took a nap instead. Ooh. That's how I want you to think about it. Just take a nap. Take a nap. It's yes. Good for you.
Yes. Yes. Every hot take you want to put out there, just go to sleep. Just take a nap.
That's it. Put it in your fist and then just put that fist under your head and then drift off. And by the time you wake up, your fist has unfurled and this terrible, stupid thought has gone away.
Just
and also you're rested.
Yes, I'm here for sleep. I'm here for the jigsaw puzzle. I did at the start of the pandemic, I was trying to get into puzzles, which I did enjoy. I got this puzzle. It was a bunch of vintage erotic Pulp Fiction covers.
That's the most Nicole thing you've ever seen.
I know. It's just, I am a parody of myself.
I love that. So it's like naked erotic jigsaws. Yes. Classic Nicole. She's like, let me put my own spin on it. Yeah. Classic. Yes. I love that.
And it was fine. And then I got my cat and I just did not have a place where I could keep the puzzle out without her like batting at it and all this kind of stuff. Sure. And so I finished it and put it away and I didn't buy anymore. Oh. But I do want to buy one of those gradient ones because I like the challenge of the gradient pieces. You know, just like I'm just looking at two or three colors and I'm just going to put that together.
It makes your brain work a little bit harder.
Yeah. All right. So, Bim, you talked about jigsaw puzzles and sleep.
Yes.
Okay. I don't necessarily have a cute little name for this, but and it probably is bad. But I am going to recommend just a nice little gossipy Google into, you know, some kind of harmless celebrity gossip that, you know, it's not about anybody being mistreated, you know, or abused or anything. It's just like, huh, why did they break up? Or, huh, did they really date? And my example of that is the Canadian ice dancing team, Tessa Virtue and Scott Moore.
Nicole.
Now, I am late to this because I don't follow ice dancing and ice skating or anything like that beyond the Olympics, you know. And sure. When I'm watching it, I am fascinated. It is mesmerizing. It's a beautiful sport. I completely see why people are, you know, enamored with it. But this ice dancing pair, they were together. They retired after the 2018 Olympics, I believe. At that point, they have been partners for 20 years, over 20 years, since their childhood, right?
Right.
They have some of the most sensual routines I have ever seen. Like, their faces, they are acting, okay?
They are acting, capital A.
And one of the things that I've noticed, and again, I am not an expert. Like I said, I don't really follow the sport. But what I've noticed is that a lot of times when in these pairings, the man is just there to lift the woman up and throw her down the ice rink, right? Just like,
wow, that is so beautifully reductive. I love it.
I mean, I don't want to reduce their skill,
sure.
But you always end up watching the woman because her attire is a little flashier, right? And, you know, she is done up in a particular kind of way and, you know, she exposes more flesh, which is usually what happens in any kind of sport, right?
Where
the woman is much more exposed than the man
is. Look at this political broadcast. Yes.
But in the case of Tessa and Scott, you look at him almost as much as you look at her, because he is making these faces like, I love you. You are the best thing that I have ever seen. Oh, my God. He puts his nose into her neck. He puts his nose into her armpit. He is like cradling her head. When they do this little routines where they're like separated, but they're spinning at the same speed and velocity and grace and all of that shit. Again, you're watching him as much as you're watching her. Like, they are really just like this really beautiful, beautiful pair, clearly deserving of all of their awards and accolades and all that kind of stuff. But then it's just like, y'all gotta be fucking. At some point.
I'm not saying right now, but at some point, you did it.
At some point, because they were from early childhood, maybe like 7 or 8 years old or something like that. So then they're going through adolescence together. And somebody had to be like, what if we just kissed? Like,
right.
Let's just see what happens.
That feels human to me.
Right.
I mean, Nicole, I too am fascinated by this pair in particular, because like you said, there is so much emotion in their skates. Like, they are out there and they make you believe whatever story. Because that's the thing you always hear. People are like, oh, you know, the storytelling and blah, blah. And I'm like, well, storytelling. They went out there to do the fucking things that are going to get them the points. Like, some of these people are just like, they do the work like they're machines. They're like, all right, triple axel, whatever the fuck. All right, double salco, whatever. They do it. They land it. They get their 10 out of 10, whatever. And then these two are two of the very few pairs that you watch and you think, oh, I get it. There's a narrative.
Yes.
They're telling a story. They're doing this thing and I'm following along and it is wordless. And suddenly I think I get opera. What is this? And you feel feelings and it's because of the emoting. That guy, Scott, loves to act. I'm like, after you finish dancing, you people should be in the movies. Like, what is win some Junos. You motherfuckers should be in Canada making movies. Like, the world and its whole cousin goes to Canada to make movies. You're there, guys. Make movies. He's so good at, like you said, the emotion of whatever his character is in any given dance. And she is fantastic. Like, she is just, like you said, your eyes drawn to her. But, of course, your eyes drawn to him. And there's something about the ease of their chemistry.
Yes.
It doesn't look like they're working at it. It looks like one person is the extension of the other. And a part of me is kind of like, of course you can form these bonds. Of course you can without any kind of sexual connection.
Yes.
But the most fanciful, romantic, horny part of me is just kind of like, please tell me you guys did it.
Yes.
And continue to do it. Yes. I really love doing it because that shit looks like it translates onto the ice. And I'm not saying you should take your clothes off, but if you did, I feel like most of us would be like, okay, like that's what they do now, because they generate so much chemistry that I'm just kind of like, what is it like inside your brain?
Yes, so much chemistry. And not just, okay, they're doing their regular like ice dancing moves, whatever, that we kind of see traditionally. And then the next thing you know, this woman is straddling his face and like doing some like flip. And I'm like, oh, now you are talking Nicole's language. What's going on?
I can just see you poking up on the sofa like, wait, what? That is so your speed.
Oh my God. Okay, so I was watching all their like routines, you know, particularly like after they got to adulthood, because I was like, I don't care about you when you were like little. But once they got to adult,
you don't like teen content.
No,
in any form.
I really don't. I do not want to watch children
it's
at
not
all.
For you.
And so there was like one routine, and she was coming off of an injury, and she kind of fumbled a little bit at the start, and they did this like move where they separated, and he was like moving down the ring, and she was clearly like, I can't finish, and so he looks back at her. And she just shakes her head and then she moves off. They have this wordless communication that obviously I'm sure plenty of pairs and people have where they work together. But they didn't even say words to each other. But he knew that she needed a little like something needed to happen. They needed a break. But okay, so then I was looking at interviews and things off the ice. He was, let me just say, I know that they were tired of people making this accusation and asking it, and I respect that. That's their privacy. They need to have it. But baby, right. I would look at, he was so possessive. He did not like anybody walking up on her. You know, they win their awards, and of course, she's like in number one, the number one spot, the top of the little like podium. And I'm looking at the other teammates, right? Now, when the man would go to, like, bring the woman down, she's, like, stepping down naturally herself. But Tessa is like, no, help me. And she reaches out her arms like, oh, I'm so, you know, pitiful. Pick me up. And he does. He makes sure that she does not touch the ground. Girl, I was like, nah, something's going on here. And then Scott got engaged to a woman that he has known for a very long time as well. And obviously, again, his private life is his private life. And he did not really want to expose that, because as someone who has been in the, you know, limelight for a very long time, he wants to keep what's his. I understand that.
I love that.
But the two of them, Scott and Tessa, were talking about that. And it was just so awkward. It was like the tension was,
The thing is, it must be very difficult to be in a platonic pair.
Mm-hmm.
Where your chemistry zings. Like, it feels like if you touch the screen, they'd be static.
Yes.
And it must be difficult also for the partner.
Right.
Well, the partners, plural, of both of them, who were kind of like, I have eyes, don't I? I can see. And if I can't see, I can fucking read some of the stuff people are saying. Because, so this is the thing, I don't believe in shipping real people. It is odd and weird. And if I do it, I do it in the privacy of my own home or my friend's podcast, obviously. But it's like, I know how icky it can be and how icky it gets very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Because suddenly it's kind of like casting all sorts of aspersions on people's behavior and blah, blah, blah. But the simple pleasure when, like you said, the indulgence of going deep into a rabbit hole and emerging cleansed slash even dirtier than when you went in, because now you've absorbed all this nonsense from the internet. But you come out the other side and you're like, I know both too much and too little. And also, I can never confirm anything that I feel.
Right.
And I love that. That to me is the joy of it, where you're just kind of like, this was an entirely fruitless 2 hours.
Yes.
That I just spent in this hole. And now I've come out of it. I've accomplished nothing. My pile of work is still sitting there on the desk. I could have done that. But instead, I took something and I made my heart feel good. And that's how I feel about some of my favorite pairs. And fucking Scott and Tessa, every time I see them, without fail, every single time I think about them, I think to myself, just very quietly, and I don't admit it to people at all, I just think to myself, oh, I bet they did it. That's my full thought. I love that they won all these awards. They're amazing athletes. They've got the Olympics and the whatever. But at the core, like I said, the lizard brain, horny part of my head is kind of like, oh, man, I hope they did do it. I hope they had a lot of fun doing it. Because that shit, it looks like it must have been amazing. They're so in tune that you just think to yourself like, man, imagine how that connection would translate. I bet it's amazing. Girl. I hope it's great when they do it.
Girl.
And then you feel like a 19-year-old perv. But that is who I am at my core. I want to believe everybody's doing it and having a great time while they do it.
Yes.
I'm a child.
Yes, yes. I just love a nice little harmless celebrity gossip deep dive.
I love how fired up you are by that.
Yes. Bim, thank you so much for joining me. It's been so nice to be like reunited on the mic with you.
This is a pleasure to sit and talk with you.
Thank you. Tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at Bimadew. That's B-I-M-A-D-E-W, even though I'm not currently tweeting because it's Ramadan and I'm trying to be holy and the internet is full of filth. And you can also find my work at thisamericanlife.org because I'm a producer at This American Life.
Yes, you are. The episodes on delights. What is it, the title again?
The Book of Delights.
The Book of Delights, yes. That was beautiful. It was incredible.
Thank you. I was very happy to work on that. I'm very proud of that episode.
You should be. It was awesome.
Thanks, Mom.
This Is Good For You is hosted by me, Nicole Perkins, and produced by Multitude. Our lead producer is Eric Silver, our editor is Brandon Grugel, and our executive producers are Amanda McLaughlin and me. Our theme was created by Don Will, and our art is by Jessica E. Boyd. You can follow the show at This Is Good Pod, and you can follow me at Tennessee Whiskey Woman. That's T-N, whiskey with an E, woman. And a huge, huge thank you to everyone who supports the show on Patreon, especially to our supporting producer-level patrons, Chelsea, Conchetta, Courtney, and Elizabeth. To get exclusive rewards like stickers, monthly playlists curated by me, and even custom drabbles written just for you, join us for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/thisisgoodpod. This was good for me. Was it good for you?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.